Hello, Internet. I think we're broadcasting.
Is this thing on?
I don't know. All right. Hello? So, Brita, before everything got started, and just in case you know, there's a pre-show and Brita just doesn't invite herself.
No, I don't. I show up at the last possible second.
Yeah. Brita's in the boys' room smoking cigarettes.
I'm also notorious for hanging up at exactly 9 p.m.
That's right.
She's smoking cigarettes and driving safety pins through her nose.
I'm out.
Wait a second. Matthew, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Awesome. Yes.
Yep. Cool.
And we are live and recording.
I'll try not to embarrass myself then.
So anyway, we were having a discussion. What weird is it bringing up? We just before the show started, we saw the Rothko painting sold for $46 million. And Weird and Jay were about to rev up into a full anti-modern art rant, and I told them that would not go over very well. And instead,
"Wait a minute! First of all, $45 million is chump change.
$46 million.
$46 million, whatever.
Yes, it is chump change.
Here, I'm gonna drop the link into chat, Brita, so you know what we're talking about.
I'm not in chat yet,
but
hold on.
Oh man,
I pointed out that I had that opinion once before, and that you had changed my mind about it with one devastating comment.
Did I?
Yes.
Okay.
You don't remember what that was?
So no. Brita, my lead up is, I'm pretty sure that Jackson Pollock is the first internet troll before the internet was invented.
Okay. What was the comment, Alan?
You said
$46 million painting.
Well, what you said was, you go do it.
Right.
I'm pretty damn sure I could make something look exactly like this.
I'm pretty damn sure you couldn't.
I'm pretty sure I could. Mm-mm. I'm looking at a large yellow rectangle with a smaller blue rectangle. I'm pretty sure I'm capable of geometric shapes and paint. Even with my meager skills.
Yeah. And so here would be my argument towards that is Gecko 45. Is Gecko 45 the epitomable mall ninja is not actually as far as I know, from well-meaning sources, it was all a shtick, but he stuck with the shtick and he committed to the shtick. And indeed, he was a troll. Now, there's an artful level to the trollness. I will cite that is that, yeah, Jackson Pollock did manage to make those paintings and sell it. But I still see I think it's more of his gusto than his talent.
Hmm. Well, Picasso broke art auction records this week. One of his paintings just sold this week for $179 million.
Wow. See, I actually won't go that far. I'll admit that Picasso is an absolute fine artist. I just think his art looks like shit. but again, okay. that entirely boils down to my taste.
Yes.
You know, but Pollock, I cannot get behind Pollock being a great artist. A great huckster maybe, but not an artist.
I like his fish.
They are good.
funny story on that. The fish. I was camping with my family when I was a young boy. My dad took me fishing. We were fishing for flounder. All we caught were pollock.
Mm-hmm.
I ran through the campground, all excited, yelling at the top of my lungs to my mom, "Mommy, mommy, I caught a pollock."
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Fortunately, we're, with Massachusetts, where they'd be Polish populations not very high.
Yeah, no, they're mostly in Boston, too.
Yeah, they weren't on the Cape.
And Cleveland.
So. I caught a pollock.
I used to make that joke all the time on the boats, especially the Polish boats. They appreciated that.
I bet they did.
They did. It was all my delivery.
Oh, look, it's the music. It is Thursday, May 14th, 2015. This is episode 150 of the Score Report, the sesquicentennial episode. I like saying sesquicentennial.
Yeah.
Gathered last week. Yep. It is a fun. It's like triskaidekaphobia.
It just rolls off the tongue. Sesquicentennial. The only reason I know that is because a while back, Texas had its sesquicentennial, 150 years. Otherwise, I wouldn't have any clue.
They invented that word just an excuse to drink, didn't they?
I'm sure they did.
We don't want to wait another 50 years before we can get shit-faced before noon.
Our guest today is international man of mystery, Matthew Allen.
If that is your real name.
It might not be his real name.
It might not be.
It could be a pseudonym.
So now, being an international man of mystery, that means that he's part of the Masonic police force?
They give you a badge and no bullets. You got to buy your own.
You got to buy a length of sewer pipe and a nail.
Yeah.
So we have to get the inevitable jokes out of the way.
Private Dick.
Oh man.
I'm sorry.
That may be, especially given today, maybe really accurate.
Brita's been wanting to say that for like 3 days now.
Yes, I've been waiting to say that on air for 3 days. Just
Private Dick.
I think you need to get business cards with that on it. Maybe with like a little clever, you know, graphic.
No.
I cannot be designed the graphic. I'm just saying.
Wow. Okay. now I don't know. Everybody on the Squirrel Report has read Matthew's blog for years now. He doesn't post very often, but what he does post is very good. And he just recently did an article in a little magazine called Shooting Illustrated that we may have heard of.
I haven't.
I don't know.
You know, isn't there somebody else here that works at that rag?
I got an awesome editor.
I can neither confirm nor deny. No, wait a minute. I can confirm that.
Yeah. Anyway, there was a great article in Shooting Illustrated, which is a fine publication.
Right.
Face Your Fear, which I thought was a really good article. I guess you know the thing that probably everybody wants to know is, Matthew, how did you wind up in this business? I mean, it's not the film noir, hard-boiled private detective, you know, from like the Maltese Falcon or something like that, you know?
Yeah, you know, that's – when I get that question, it's always like, well, were you in law enforcement or were you in military? And I was neither. I joke, but it's actually in truth. I helped solve my first murder case when I was a sophomore in high school.
Wow.
Yeah,
like Encyclopedia Brown.
Yeah, I was a fan of those books as a kid.
Same.
I based my entire career on 1980s television.
Magnum PI, right?
Oh yeah, Magnum PI, the A Team, the Highwaymen. You know, all those shows that are non-existent anymore. And I once told a teacher, she asked what I was going to do, and I was like, well, I'm going to solve people's problems, and they're going to pay me for it. And she was like, no one does that for a living. I was like, you'll see.
You drive around in a mystery van, don't you?
Ferrari.
Yeah. No, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the Ferrari. You know. I have driven a Ferrari. What's the only thing? The only thing I haven't driven was a Lamborghini. I've retrieved several high-end vehicles over the years for clients.
You ever need a hand, man?
I want to hear about this murder that you solved in high school.
It was a very big deal here in St. Louis at the time. She was a 12-year-old girl who had been basically brutally raped and killed. And they had posted pictures and sketches in the newspaper. and one of them really rang out to me. But one of the things in the article, in the news article at the time, mentioned was that the girl had had cuts on her arms, as if the way the journalist wrote it at the time was that as if she had died and the perpetrators had cut her on the arms to try to wake her back up, so to speak. And between that and the picture, I had switched high schools at that point, but I remember a group of guys in junior high, about four or five of them, who all carried buck knives on their hips. And it, not that there was anything unusual about it, but it was more the fact that those guys stood out. They were in that area at the time. They were local to that area because it wasn't very far from me. And so I started, doing the whole, putting glasses on him and doing the whole nine yards. And I kind of thought I knew who it was. And eventually I went and told my principal about it. They brought in two detectives from St. Louis County. And I had gone through my old yearbook, a previous year yearbook, and found the guy. And I said, I think that's him. And he's doing life in prison. He was the guy. He confessed to it. Him and an older guy did it. And so at that point, I realized that if, there was no reason for me to go into law enforcement because I was already doing the law enforcement's job for them. So,
wow.
I'm joking, but yeah. So that was really kind of the die was kind of cast on that aspect. I always knew what I wanted to do in that. Everyone thought I was crazy. And then actually 2 weeks out of high school, I got retained by a cousin actually to look into a fraud committed against his mom. And my first retainer was $200, and that was in 1992.
And that was decent money.
Yeah, it was, And so I kind of started down that path, and then there was an interim period of waiting tables, and I had worked for my old man a little bit, and then I actually went to bodyguard school out on the East Coast for a while and came back and started working for a local investigation firm that started up. And worked for them for about 2.5 years, and then I got contracted out to now. It's the infamous thing here in town. I went and worked for August Bush IV on his contract bodyguard at the time, I always called him. He was my Afghanistan. So
Afghanistan. Yeah. Shouldn't have been Iraq.
I used to joke with him. I'm actually forbidden by contract of ever writing anything about it, but I always joked that I was going to write a biography called Those Hot August Nights. And, I quit that job. I started like 24, 25 working for him and left and started my own firm after 9/11 in 2002 because I was burnt out. And, no one quit down there. I kept getting paychecks from like February to June. I thought it was hush money, actually. I was like, oh, okay, well. And that was kind of the die I was kind of cast. Everybody thought I was crazy for getting out. I was 27 years old. I was making great money, but I was toast. And my friends just thought I was insane. I was like, I got out before the dead hooker. And lo and behold, I was kind of right. It just took 10 years.
There was a dead hooker?
Well, she wasn't a hooker, but she was a dead girlfriend. She OD'd in his house.
Oh.
Oops.
Yeah.
See.
Yeah.
There was no sign that said dead junkie storage?
No, none. At least not when I was there. Maybe it came after. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, and so after that, I started my own firm and just started doing things that were really different than everybody else. You do the cheating spouse cases anymore. I do them for a sizable retainer because they're all dramatic, but I try to stay away from them and I try to do the really interesting cases.
Is that one of those things where you like somebody comes to you with a cheating spouse and you name some absurd amount of money
in cash?
Hoping that they'll think it's too much, but if they're stupid enough to pay it, you're okay.
Yeah, and it happens time and time again. I'm like, I'm just going to price them out of this, and then they say, okay. I've got one client, and I've been working for her for over 2 years, and we're into the six figures. So,
wow.
Yeah. Now, granted, that's me. Yeah.
Matthew, my dad had a private investigation firm after he retired from the Massachusetts State Police. And he had a case where a gentleman hired him to check up on his girlfriend because he wanted to know if she was worth sticking with or if he should stay with his wife. So he was paying money.
Wow.
Good money. Cash money. Because Dad learned real quick, you don't take anything but cash.
Yeah, that's right.
No checks. No nothing. Cash money. And because he was with this girl and he wanted to. That's right. He wanted to know if she was cheating on him. This is his girlfriend. Not his wife. His girlfriend. He wanted to know if she was cheating on him.
I've had three or four of those in the course.
Dad's comment was, well, I took what I thought I should get, doubled it, then I added a couple grand. He came up with it.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah.
Wow. I had one. It's been years ago. And she was having an affair with a pastor who was married, and she wanted me to see if he was stepping out on her.
And I
looked at her. I said, why don't you just write me a small check? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But your dad was, he was right. Cause not my first case. My second case was what led to me not being allowed back in Mexico. I don't know if I'm persona non grata or if I'm wanted. I'm not quite sure. I think I'm persona non grata. When the FBI came to visit me, that's what they told me, was that I was persona non grata.
And
I'm never going back. When we got married, my wife looked and she's like, well, it'd be nice to go to Mexico, but I guess we won't do that. And I was like, actually, it wouldn't be nice. I had flown into Central America one time, and there was some sort of problem with the plane. And they're like, we may have to land in Mexico. And,
I'm just going to jump.
I made my mind up at that point that I was going to make international news because I was going to go big or go home. I was not going to Mexican prison.
Yeah. Spending 20 years in a Mexican prison is real low on my list of real low on my bucket list.
I am too mildly handsome for American prison. So me in Mexican prison? No.
You'd be the belle of the ball.
Indeed I would.
Hey, we have a caller. Let's see what they want.
No way.
Ask them the calling question.
It's area code 508. Hello.
Hey, it's the Arctic Elf.
Hey, Arctic Elf.
Arctic Elf.
Ask him the question.
Yeah. What's your
calling question? You have to answer.
Yeah, you have to answer the calling question, Arctic Elf.
Oh, the calling question?
Yes.
Yes.
Did you do your homework?
If you get it wrong, Matt Allen gives you a wedgie.
I want something non-human. I don't care whether it's a dog or somebody's turtle or.
I think a turtle would be an awesome thing to put on the bill.
It's a tortoise.
Not if it's a sea turtle.
No, not if it's an actual turtle. Weird.
Yeah.
If it was Myra on the bill, then yes, it would be a tortoise.
Except that she's a turtle.
Throw in the water.
She's an Eastern box turtle?
Box turtle.
That's the official name, Eastern box turtle.
So I also need to apologize to Jay for giving him shit about 300 Blackout a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I have found an application that would make me want a 300 Blackout with a can.
Hunting in Virginia.
And that is, what's that?
Hunting in Virginia?
No. Actually, the hobo's under the bridge on the third hole of the golf course down the street.
What's the par on those?
Three shots.
I don't know what the par is, but there's no shortage of them, and I don't think they'd be good eating.
They're awfully gamey.
So they're just a nuisance species then?
Yeah, it's a varmint.
I think so.
Okay.
Now the deer on the 13th, those would also have, 300 blackout would have been very good for those too. About 15 yards.
Oh yeah, you could do that with open sights.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, for the people listening at home who have also not done their homework, the call-in topic is, since evidently now the putting faces on the dollar bill is just entirely a crowdsourced popularity contest, who would you put on the money? And I like the idea of, yeah, non-human entities. Even inanimate objects would be even better.
I like superheroes. I think we ought to go with American superheroes. You could have Batman. You could have Superman. You could have Wonder Woman. You could have...
John Moses Browning.
We could
combine the current practice of historically important politicians and Weird's favorite topic of cryptozoology and put Nancy Pelosi on the bill.
She'd have to be dead first, which, okay.
Undead.
The people of San Francisco salute their lizard overlords.
I'm just trying to say that I believe she's a demi-lich.
I would believe that. I do not want to roll initiative and find out.
Look at those horrible eyes. She's an undead sorceress.
She is a plain run-of-the-mill succubus. That's all.
No.
She's not a succubus.
Succubuses are hot. Jay?
Yeah.
She's an old
succubus. Either that or Jay just told us way too much about his personal fantasy life.
Yes. Yeah. Jay obviously did not read Monster Hunter Nemesis.
I've read all of Larry's Monster Hunter stories.
Thanks for calling Arctic Elf.
All right. Have a good one.
Whoa. We have more callers. This is area code 270. Hello.
Hello, Squirrel Report.
Hello.
Greetings, Tommy.
Hey, Tommy.
How's it going?
I met that dude.
Hey, I met that other dude who met me.
Oh, yeah.
Matthew Allen. The other dude.
How is your lovely
wife? He showed off
evening,
his detective
Tommy.
Skills and recognized my wife and I from behind and after only seeing pictures of us on Facebook.
Wow.
He has attention to detail, that Matthew.
I try.
Yeah.
Which was really the impressive part about it was that I found you and there was no money involved because, you know.
That one was gratis.
Well, you know, I'm brilliant.
Why am I thinking of hookers now all of a sudden?
Well, I guess we just figured if we hung out by the lever action rifles long enough, we'd find you.
I think I'd been in the convention all about 50 seconds when I was like, well, time to go look at the lever gun. So
hang out at Turnbull. You will see Matthew Allen.
Oh, yeah.
He's facing a wall, looking at a 357 lever action. I hear a voice behind me. I prefer that in 45-70. I'm like, oh, who's that? Oh, look, it's Matthew Allen.
Yeah, that's, man. I wish I would have had a 45-70 lever gun when I was doing protection work in earnest, because that would have been a lot of fun.
It's a good caliber.
It's a good caliber. I did fine with the Mini 14 on a couple of occasions, but, you know.
So you got one of those ones that had the accuracy attached.
No, you didn't ask me what the distance was.
Okay. I love the Mini 14 shooter correction chart.
Oh man, yeah. I always wanted to do that bolt on attachment on there, and by the time I started, pricing everything, I wanted to do the Mini 14. I was like, I should just get something else,
like an AR.
Yeah.
And even these days now, look at the prices of Mini 14s. They're not even like the cheaper alternative to ARs.
Well, and the thing is, it's not like you can really go out and buy a Mini 14 mags.
No, you can't. Hey, Tommy, what's your answer to the call-in topic?
Well, as far as what it would do with internet loading where they're going, it's going to end up as cats.
Cats?
I like Grumpy Cat on the 5, and I can have Cheeseburger on the 10.
That's pretty brilliant.
Okay.
That's pretty brilliant.
So, but, you know, if it was up to me, I'd put bacon on all the money.
Oh.
Ooh.
So
like, I would like to subscribe to your newsletter.
So the $5 bill would have five slices of bacon on it?
Yes, you can count the slices of bacon. And also, it says America, and it makes the right people angry.
Would you make it scratch and sniff, too?
Oh.
That would be amazing, but I might eat my money. We could use actual bacon as currency, but I'd never get to buy anything.
Yeah, printed on pork rinds.
Oh. My newest pleasure is microwave pork rinds. They're amazing.
Microwave pork rinds? Tell me about this.
They come in little bags like microwave popcorn, but when you microwave them, they turn into puffy pork rinds.
Oh, what?
My God. And there's like no grease in there. It's weird.
What?
I have to buy them from Amazon, though.
I have a new.
What sorcery is this?
Yes, I must have.
Yeah, go search Amazon microwave pork rinds. They're like pork chicharrones or something. And it's amazing.
But tell me, must I commune with the elder gods?
Yes.
Oh,
must
my
I
gosh.
Break the seventh
the
seal?
God of pork.
They do exist.
Wow.
And they're amazing.
Well, thank you for that.
Bacon curls.
My work here is done. All
right. Thanks for calling, Tommy.
I made a meatloaf this evening. I want to tell you, I made a meatloaf this evening, and instead of using breadcrumbs, I ground up pork rinds.
Holy crap, it's a real thing.
Yeah.
Microwave.
Yum.
Pork rinds.
Okay, sign me up.
I'm going to get the monthly delivery.
And they've got the nice Atkins stamping on it because yes, indeed, pork rinds are low carb. They are paleo.
So Matthew, this article.
Poor Matthew. He's we're all over the place, and Matthew, what is going on?
We are
the conversations squirrels. I've had to sit on the outside of that one was actually I got something from it. So.
You got microwave pork rinds, man.
Damn right I got microwave pork rinds.
Anyway, I thought this article in Shooting Illustrated was interesting for a couple of reasons. One, it was just an interesting in and of itself. But two, it was interesting because the Facebook kind of blew up last week, I think it was, with this, you know, defense, you know, one of those perennial, you know, odd things in your purse you can use for defense. Or somebody was taking pictures of, you know, like women with keys in their fingers and, you know, stuff like that. That just was, you know, just these memes that keep popping up that are just complete bullshit.
Oh, yeah. That just drives me nuts. Because, and I've said it before, especially in a couple of women's lectures, I'm like, you recognize you're a tool user and then you go out and pick the shittiest tool you can find.
Yeah.
I mean, carry a rock, for God's sakes.
In all fairness, wasn't that mostly college students?
I thought it was
pulled from. I mean, again, there are better, you know, there were several that had mace, which is good. They better not be in Massachusetts because you need a permit for it.
Not anymore, Jay.
Oh, that's right. That was the exchange for having the FID card made may issue, wasn't it?
Oh no, Jay. Again, it was all good news because that just means the first dumb motherfucker that enacts that is going to cast summon Alan Gura for my second D&D reference of the evening.
Nice. Yeah. So anyway, the. I don't know. It just struck me as an interesting combination because you've got, you know, this article kind of alludes to the whole, you know, you are the weapon, not whatever you carry.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we were like, wow, we should get him on the show.
I guess the thing though, I'm like, they pull out keys. I'm like, how about you pull out a knife? You know, that's if you're going to start somewhere.
Yeah.
That's legit. Because I don't care who you are. And everyone's like, well, people will say, well, a knife can be taken away from you. I have never heard of anyone having a knife taken away from them in that situation. And years ago, a mentor I had, he was actually a Massachusetts state patrolman. He had he always said he unfortunately had to work through caucus during the presidential run. But he said, you know, everyone talks about learning edged weapons and knife fighting. And he said, respond to a domestic abuse call with a drunk woman with a, who's had a fifth of scotch and a butcher knife. He goes, that's all, the, you know, she'll teach you more about edged weapons than you'll ever want to know.
Wow.
So, all right. Yeah. So drink more scotch. I got it.
Yeah. Right. More scotch and bigger knives. That, and that solves the world's problem.
Yeah. I think a lot of times we hear these, platitudes. I don't know what to call them. It's like these things people say that just kind of get handed down that aren't based in any kind of rational thing. Like, you know, they like
stupid. That's what we call it.
But, you know, like people make this stuff up and it's not based on anything. They just, you know, it's just bullshit. You know, like the whole, oh yeah, they'll take it away from you and use it against you. Yeah. Good luck with that.
Well, what gets me is the total damn grass eaters that are all like, you know, I mean, I've always got a pocket knife on me, and I'm always using a damn pocket knife because they're fucking useful. And there's all these, I mean, especially that I live in Massachusetts, there's all these grass eaters that just, the moment I flick the blade out, they're suddenly just like, oh my God, oh, like, you know, like I'm pointing a pistol at them. But it's, and then at the same time, they're also constantly saying, oh, can I borrow your knife? Or, oh, can you open this for me? Or all of that. And then they have the gall to ask me, you know, why are you always carrying a knife? Well, number one, I'm always using it and you're always using it.
Yeah.
But number two, look at these opposable thumbs. We are tool users.
That's exactly right.
We don't have sharp claws. We run for shit. We've got no camouflage. We're naked. You know what? We're all about the tools. I'm wearing clothes on my back, and I carry knives and guns, and I've got all sorts of shit on me. It's because, guess what? I ain't that good at stuff all on my own. But you know what? Put some tools in my hands, I can get some stuff done.
Well, you know, I was at a maybe 5 years ago, there was a church shooting here where a guy walked in and shot the pastor, and so they did a big security conference with law enforcement in the area. And so I went. I just wanted to be nosy. And so they were. So law enforcement was going to give all this security advice, right? And so they had all the regional police chiefs for that area come in. And this one chief of police said, he was like, you know, I carry a gun every day. And he goes, some of these church pastors were asking about, you know, defensive weapons in the church and things like that. And he goes, there doesn't need to be a reason. He goes, you know, my wife, she goes out. She doesn't carry a gun. I don't even let her carry pepper spray. She doesn't need that. She's a nice woman. And I was like, this is your philosophy on security? Is that she's a nice woman? Therefore, by default, what does that mean?
That means that she's gonna use that quotation in her divorce hearing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. You know, one that I actually always thought, because I've got one, and I used to buy them. One of the knives that I hated to see leave the market was the original Spyderco credit card knife. Mm. And I think they stopped making it after 9/11 because of 9/11.
Yeah.
And that was such a – I used to buy those and give those out, especially women, because it was carryable. Because the one thing I have found, especially for women, is that there's no place for them to carry a knife in their pocket. And so, you know, that filled a void great because it would always go in the back pocket.
We have itty-bitty pockets.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, because I was talking. Go ahead.
I like the K-Bar TDI. That's my ladies who aren't, you know, aren't going to go out and buy a gun tomorrow and aren't necessarily going to mess around with the various permitting systems and all of that. I'm just like, here, K-Bar TDI.
Yep.
Except for like North Carolina and maybe a few other places, it's just a pocket knife. There's nothing special you need to worry about. But let me tell you. Yeah, you pull that thing out, and again, super duper intuitive design. Just keep sticking it in the other person until whatever you don't like stops.
That's a brilliant design because it's a combination of stabbing and punching, and you're going to be hard in that worst case scenario, supposedly of taking a knife out of someone's hands. That's going to be the toughest one to take out. And
well, there's nothing to grab onto,
but
and on top of that, the blade extends down as a knuckle guard, so your hand's not going to slide down that blade. And yeah, it's just a really brilliant design for how small it is.
Yeah, because if you look at that knife, and even if you had an attacker situation who was grabbing your wrist, they're going to be up close to you. You can just keep spinning your hand, and they're not either going to be able to get a hold of your hand, or they're going to be getting cut to shreds in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that's a phenomenal design. And I think that, you know, I think the interesting thing with like the Freddie Gray situation is that you're seeing now that people. It is starting to – these dumbass laws are starting to transcend into common sense rule. Like, well, these don't really work. Or it's like the guy in New York yesterday who was wielding the hammer. And it's like – I always point out – I was carrying a fixed blade knife. It was part of one of my daily carries. And it's an Isuzu Tour. And it was on my hip, and a cop asked me – it's funny. I've had two cop interactions on weapons recently. And both of them relatively positive, but he was like, you know, why are you carrying a fixed blade knife? And I was like, it's got a 2-inch blade. It's actually shorter than, you know, most of my tactical folders. And I would love to see clear across the board the knife laws really get changed in this country because.
Amen, brother. Amen.
Yeah, if you really want, I said a politician wanted to run on a good hard ticket, run on the repeal law. Yeah. And then you've got, you know, and you've got the switchblade laws, which are, I mean, I've got three assisted folders that will open faster than my Microtex.
My Kershaw Crown will open faster than a full auto knife. It's yeah. ridiculous.
And I can carry a better knife.
I can carry a 45 with 11 rounds in it, but I can't carry a knife that opens with the push of a button.
That's exactly
on
right.
What planet does this make sense?
Right.
Yep.
Right.
I've even got non-assisted knives that open faster than some automatics.
Yeah.
Actually, the fastest knife I have is a Spyderco Navaja. And that opens – it's the fastest knife I open, and it's the flick of the wrist, and it's barely a flick of the wrist.
Yep. But, yeah, no, knife laws are so stupid.
No, they are. Well, and, you know, it was interesting because I was reading – you know, because the whole knife law came from the 1950s. And,
yep, you're welcome. You can blame Italians for it.
It was actually that stupid movie.
Blackboard Jungle.
Blackboard Jungle, which had Italians in it.
Every time.
Scared the white people. Bunch of damn racists. That call-in number, 214-530-0036. You can talk to Matthew Allen, our international man of mystery. And in case you don't know, we have Brita.
Yeah.
And Weird and Jay and myself, Alan. We don't say our names very often. If somebody was a new listener, they might be going, who are
my
these
name
idiots?
Is Inigo Montoya.
I actually have been kind of searching Matthew's blog for the blog post, and I finally have bookmarked it. I'm such a dork. Like, it's been it's a blog post from 2009, so what, almost 6 years now, and I just now bookmarked it. This is the blog post that I think it may have been one of the first blog posts I ever read of Matthew's from 2009, and it was when I first started blogging, and I first started thinking about self-defense, and Mike said to me, "You have to read this. You have to read this guy." I said, okay. And I'm going to put the link in the chat, but Alan, if you could also put the link in the blog post, that'd sure. be great. And it really, it was honestly one of the first things I read that it clicked for me. And it changed the way I thought about myself and what was possible for me to do. I mean, I'm a small person, you know, and I never thought like, oh, I could possibly, you know, ever win against anybody bigger than me. But it is definitely a mindset thing, and I think this blog post was kind of like the catalyst for me changing my mindset about self-defense. And that was back in 2009. So thank you, Matthew.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, no pressure there. That was that was an interesting year because I did a lot of heavy writing that year because the market tanked. The that's kind of like was the first fallout year from the housing crash. Mm-hmm. And work kind of dried up, at least the first 6 months of the year. It wasn't non-existent, but I was like, and I go crazy with nothing to do. If I don't have a problem to solve, I got to do something. And so that just kind of started. And my frustration came in reading self-defense blogs and things like that was always this, no matter who was writing, there was always this sense of heavy political correctness.
Right.
And it didn't cut through the bullshit, and no one wanted to talk about blood, and everyone said stop the fight and didn't want to say kill. And I get that, because other people do read that and they tear that apart. And so that came as a sense of frustration. I think around that time I had a client shoot an intruder who had been mm-hmm. a stalker, and up until that point, she had been absolutely terrified this was going to happen. And she's like, I am just afraid that he is going to kill me. And I said, why you shoot him? He bleeds. You stab him, he bleeds. You shoot him, he dies. There's nothing special about him. There's nothing superhuman about him. You know, bones are bones and they're going to break. And you know, you can open up, the skull with a bullet and everybody dies. So there's nothing. And there's this stigma. And I think in the gun culture, we've become stigmatized with the idea of the PCP laden bodybuilder who is unstoppable, as opposed, right. You know, and that, I'm like that. Most of these guys are cowards right off the bat. And second of all, anybody, the moment they see blood leaking out of their body, they become concerned with self as opposed to whoever they're attacking. You know, there's exceptions to that rule, but by and large, that's the rule. And actually, some of that, I think there's a line in that post where I talk about leaving them dead on the floor or something like that or going at them. And I remember that actually kind of stems from a real situation that I was involved in Central America.
Yeah.
Where I started off having a gun and then I didn't have a gun, and that all happened at the airport. And thank God that was another time I was able to go home. But I was left, and I was trying to find a guy. But at one point, this guy walks up to me and says, "Are you looking for the American?" And I was, and I told him I was. He goes, "Come with me." And we literally, it was almost classic, because we start walking down this back alley, and it's dark, and it's Central America. And I'm like, this is where I meet my end. And as we're walking down the alley, I've got my hand under my shirt on my knife. And I thought, this is going to get interesting real fast. And I remember thinking at the time, he's a lot bigger than me. And I thought, well, he's going to deflate real quick if something goes bad here, because I intend to win. And I think that's the thing, is that even in that moment, and that wasn't cocksuredness. That was my mind made up. I was still terrified. I was still absolutely scared to death that was going to happen. And so this idea that, nobody gets afraid is just, you got to eat the fear. The fear is going to happen, and you don't want to, you don't get to ignore it. Everyone's like, ignore the fear. Yeah, you're not going to ignore the fear. You're going to get that, adrenaline dump in your stomach when it first happens. You don't panic. That's the key is you don't panic. And you won't, if you have a plan and you've worked on your craft and how you're going to do it, and you worked on your mindset, you won't have panic.
Jay, you were going to say something.
What was I?
I don't know.
I was just, I'm just nodding my head agreeing with Matthew, because, it's all truth, man.
So you're what here. Happened to the dude in South America?
He walked me up a flight of stairs to the American.
Yay! Happy ending.
He didn't know how relieved he should have been.
Yeah. I think he had an inkling, Matthew.
Yeah, he must have. Well, that's a deal that.
There's, having a plan and being confident is huge.
Yeah.
That's like DEET to the criminal's mosquito, if
that's
you will.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I used to, because I'm just like at the 5'10 mark in height, and I learned early on, I found out that I have a game face. I didn't realize it for a long time, or my rusting bitch face, I guess you call it. And embodied, and when I was doing protection work, especially when I was in my corporate days, we were in a lot of different scenarios and a lot of different environments, and it was amazing that, because I would encounter a lot of different people, and a lot of them were bizarre, and I had people who would, I had on a couple of occasions guys who would, you know, we in nightclubs who would make the comment, because my principal at the time was in the area was known. And so I would get blatant death threats that they were going to kill him or something like that. And just body posture and self-confidence and that in a smirk, you know, I found went a real long way. And
direct eye contact.
Yep. And, you know, eye contact's a funny thing because you don't want to hold it too long because some people, you can inflame them with too much eye contact. And so I learned to make eye contact and then dismiss them with my eyes and then come back to them as opposed to holding it too long. And that's how you found out who was crazy, because the crazy guys, they can't break eye contact.
you got to impart to them that eagerness that says, go ahead, lose it.
Right. Well, and
please.
And there's a certain aspect, you know, it can be fun too. So
yes. And you get the joy that comes with your work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That also goes to the whole self-defense thing is, I mean, you don't want to get them, you know, thinking, I mean, obviously if they're crazy, you know, they're thinking that you're the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile and they're going to slice you open. But like for the more with it, you know, two-legged predators out there, they're thinking, maybe the guy's full of fucking bravado, or maybe he actually means it. Let's go to the other person that's absolutely casting no signature of what I'm going to do if things go south.
The one that's got their nose in their phone,
right?
Exactly, nose in phone or feet down at their shoes.
Like a month ago, I was rolling through a park and I was trying to find a car on a job. And as I'm coming through, I'm getting ready to leave. I see this 20-something-year-old girl walking into the nightclub, and she had parked next to a panel van.
And
I'm bisecting her with my vehicle as she comes to the door, and I roll down the window, and you know this is. I look at her and I was like, you know, don't take this from a creepy guy in the car who's talking to you. I said, piece of advice: don't park next to panel vans. And she was like, what? I was like, look back at your car and look what you parked next to. And she kind of looked and she goes, oh. And I was like, yeah, because I don't park next to vans. There's always angry Panamanians out there.
and Libyans.
And Libyans.
Catch up with those damn Libyans.
Wasn't that a VW bus?
Yes.
Yes, it was.
Still a van.
Still a van.
Technically.
It's a German van.
It's a mid-engine van. A rear engine, actually.
214-530-0036. I'm sure we could get another call in.
Oh, VW bus and DeLorean, two rear-engine cars.
so what are, you know, are there any, like, common mistakes people make when that get them into trouble, you know? I'm thinking like, you know, the typical, you know, I mean, obviously there's, you know, going down a dark alley, blah, 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 you know, but that's,
right.
I mean, just, you know, in you've been dealing with the, I guess the.
You know, I tell you what, actually and I know it is common to, or, you know, it's the common response, but man, the phone, you know, the smartphone is this brilliant thing in one sense because it's replaced. Like for me, it's in my world, it has replaced smoking because it's giving you a completely bullshit reason to be anywhere doing absolutely nothing. I can stand in the middle of a parking lot and look like I'm texting and be shooting license plate numbers, and no one thinks a thing about it. Huh. It's become the world's greatest cover for me. I eschewed smartphones forever. I didn't want one. I was like, this is the best thing in the world because I can stand and look like a complete dumbass and be collecting all the information I need to, and the world walks right by. The flip side of that coin is people do that in earnest. And there was a really interesting period in history where before texting became popular, people were very difficult to put under surveillance. I would say from about 1998 to about 2005, it was extremely hard to by and large, have people. I'm talking regular people under any kind of surveillance because people were very aware. Part of it was post 9/11, but some of it was just people were becoming very security conscious. Concealed carry was going through, and the world was kind of shedding a whole lot of innocence. And so, there was this finite amount of time where they were very difficult to follow. People paid attention who was behind them, what cars were around, and then the smartphone came, and it all went away. it was like overnight because I can. Well, I've got a couple of cases. I mean, where I filed people 6 and 7 months, and in one case 2 years, and instead of where people used to stop at stoplights and they'd be looking in their rearview mirrors and they'd be looking around, people are checking Facebook. They stop, you know, and to the point anymore. When I work with my business partner, I'm out in the field. And he's like, I think we're burned. I was like, because you'll see someone back up and they hit the brakes and they're in a parking lot or they're doing something or they're holding too much of the light. And he goes, I think we're burned. I'm like, dude, they're on Facebook. They have no clue we're here. Because you've got to take your mentality out of it and put it. I'm like, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the one kind of mistake. I think the other I'm not a heavy drinker. I'm really not much of a drinker at all. But I think probably the big mistake most people make when out, especially if they're out and they're having a good time and they're not carrying a gun because they're drinking, is they have one beer too many or they have one drink too many. It's not even that it necessarily impairs judgment. Well, I guess it does to a degree, but it's just that it's just one too many. They're enjoying it, and it does. It takes away a certain level of self-caution.
Sent you in a condition opaque.
Yes. Yes. Huh. Yeah. The one thing that I think the big disadvantage, and it's not necessarily that it is a mistake, but I've learned this, I've paid more attention to it since having a kid, is when people are having to get kids in and out of the car. That's a very, very, you know, to focus on getting your kids secured in the car seat and being able to maintain your awareness. And so that, yeah. And it was funny because when we had our daughter, I went into very full on bodyguard mode. I was just, I mean, even to the point of like how I, you know, open the car doors. And I think, so what has to happen in that situation for parents and I'll say women who are, especially when you're dealing with a couple of kids or two or three kids, you've got to start doing a threat assessment long before you get to the car. And, you know, at that point you've got the kids, so your eyes are above and they're on street level. And so that's where you've got to be paying attention before you get to the car and things like that. And even in the world around you, because it's not just the car, it's in the malls and, you know, it's everywhere that allows you to threat assess. That way, if you're coming up to the vehicle, you've already made your determination whether or not you need to go to the vehicle. I've always said I've had women ask me, you know, what they thought they should do if they get attacked in a parking lot and their kids are in the car. And my response has always been the same thing. You got to break down the mindset of don't worry about trying to fight and getting the kids in the car seat. Shove the kids in the car, toss your keys in the car, and shut the car door.
Huh. Yeah, that's a good idea.
And then with that shut, then you fight the attacker. You do those quick moments, shut the car door, and then focus on him. And whether it's, breaking him to the point that it breaks the fight or it's, you know, terminating him in his form of existence, that becomes your focus. But now, you know, your kids aren't going to be running out in traffic. They're not going to be fleeing. Someone else isn't going to grab them. Because you don't know the nature of the attack. Maybe the attack is to distract mom while they kidnap, while someone else kidnaps the kid when the kid runs away from the car. You secure the kids in that, in this lot, this brief lockdown area, and then you commence to counterattack.
I guess,
but you've thrown your keys in the car. What weapons do you use?
Well played, Brita. Well played.
I think at that point you throw up on them.
Oh boy!
That's where you're supposed to pee on yourself and throw up.
Yeah, I wanted to go vintage 1991 there. So
yeah,
rape whistle.
I had in my freshman college dorm, there was a guy that was hearing impaired, and he always used to say, "I don't see what the point of those rape whistles are." And he popped his hearing aids. I went, "I can't hear anything."
Yeah, the whistles are just sad. I mean,
yeah, it's
by the time somebody gets to you, you know, you're already beaten, and you know, it's just the whistles are sad. I don't know why they've ever suggested those to women. It's terrible. I think
whistles anger me, because what angers me more than anything else about those stupid whistles is that you have women who will carry them when they go on the running trails. And I'm like, the running trails are all circulated around parks. What happens at parks? Soccer games. What's the most common thing you hear from a soccer game? Cheering and whistles.
Oh, yeah.
Good point.
Yep. And also, it also gives them something as the, oh, I'm better prepared, which they're not.
It's a talisman.
And I'm like, if you were actually really want to get people's attention and get the cops called, gunfire is wonderful for that.
Like I said, hollow points will whistle.
And believe it or not, sucking chest wounds don't make a lot of noise, but it's enough noise.
That's right. I mean, unless you want to be courteous and, you know, and you live in a really free state where you could, you know, carry a suppressor. So.
Or field dress them.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was
Yeah, Jed. I don't know what the bag limit there is in Virginia is.
Yeah, you can't hunt over the gut piles anyway, so.
Carrying this gut hook knife all this way, not for nothing.
Damn it, he's going to use it.
I should get one of those.
That might be the...
Wait, I don't have one of those.
All right, put it on your wish list.
I'm putting it on my wish list right now.
That would be a wonderful deterrent.
If you end up justifiably killing someone, can you keep trophies?
A little taxidermy.
Because
a nice leather,
my knife back.
A nice leather jacket with gangland tattoos might actually be an even better protection level.
your skin will make a fine poncho.
Yes. It's one of those. Oh my God, he killed a Crip. I think I'll stay away from him.
All right. Well, we're about out of time.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on, Matthew. It was really great. Matthew is obviously a private intelligence service.
I tell people I solve
problems.
He's a troubleshooter. You got trouble, you call Matthew.
Matthew, I got one more question. As a big Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett fan, how many times have you been tuned up with a blackjack?
tuned up or like been tuned up or never mind.
Either one.
Having less than 100. It's a fun. Yeah. We're
out of time. Anyway, you can find Matthew at the Straightforward in a Crooked World blog. Or
Shooting Illustrated, but not often enough. Hint.
And he's somewhere near St. Louis.
Yes.
And if
a little town nobody's ever heard of it. It's called Ferguson.
Ferguson, that's right.
If you need him, scratch an M in chalk at the corner of at the corner of Maine and Oak, and he will contact you.
Yes, that's right.
Three times. No, that's and,
I have my eyes everywhere. So
that's right. Don't call him; he'll call you
every time.
When venturing in the Far East, he found ways to conceal himself from the eyes of men.
I am not for hire in the Republic of Mexico nor England. So,
Oh, why not England?
No, they're anti-self-defense.
Okay.
I think me walking in the country is jail.
I thought maybe you did something there, too.
No, I wish.
No, yeah, it's true. Pretty much like any sort of fighting back. They're definitely the middle school principal of an entire fucking country of just this guy came after you with a knife, and so you knocked the knife out of your hand and roughed him up a little bit before you went and contacted the authorities. I'm gonna have to suspend the both of you because just fighting's bad. Ah.
All right. Well, we're out of time. We'll be back next week. And thanks everyone for listening.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
And you know what? Look, we should make this call. Today's call in topic should be next week's call in topic.
Again?
Why not? Sure. We didn't get that many comments, and it was a good one. Okay. I want to hear more.
All right.
So people have more chance to do their homework. Plus, if you remember the Masons, the gray-skinned aliens, the Illuminati, or any of that, call in because I want to hear
Art. This is the new Art Bell Coast to Coast.
Well, I just want to hear just about the Masonic police.
All right. Next week, everyone.